Hello, welcome one and all to Pop a la Carte episode 129, another Asian drama corner where myself,
Angela,
Camille,
yay, we will talk about the Asian dramas and potentially one or two movies that we have been watching or that we will watch. And starting with, we're going to go by country of origin. So we'll start with Chinese dramas, which there are the fewest because we never watch them. And then Camille and Angela will talk about the Filipino dramas they're watching. And then we'll go into all the K-dramas that have been floating around this side of the hemisphere. All right. So begin, Angela, with the Chinese drama you were watching.
I'm sort of watching two. Well, I finished. So I was watching Legend of Fae, and that's one that I love. And it makes me very happy because it's just all of the things that I want. But basically, it's the story of Zhao Fei, who is the, granddaughter of, some legendary guy. Hot grandpa, as it turns out, because, everybody she'll encounter all these people who, met him, and then there'll be flashbacks, and the first time there was a flashback, I was like, oh.
Oh, he was sexy.
That's why she keeps finding people who were in love with him. He's also the great warrior who started saved a lot of people, whatever. And so I think it's based on a web novel by the web novel author who also did Guardian, which is famous.
Okay.
But I only know the details that they shared in the drama. So I think she's supposed to be a teenager, because she gets called little girl a lot. And it's not clear how much time passes in the course of the drama. So it's about her, sort of coming of age and, being, because, her grandfather founded this place called 48 Strongholds, and, her mom is, the badass in charge of that now. But her mom has to stay there and can't leave. So, Zhao Fei runs around and, does the things away. And so then she encounters this guy, Ji Yun, who just is, chaos gremlin, basically.
Oh.
But it turns out he's the heir to he would be the emperor, except that his dynasty got overthrown or whatever.
Was this Wang Yibo?
Yes.
The guy from is now kind of playing more of the opposite character from
Yes, the emotions. It was yes. Amazing.
Wonderful.
Yeah, no, they're just really cute. It has all the things that I want because it's very bantery. They're very cute from the very, very beginning. I think the setting is really cool. The 48 Strongholds, just the aesthetic. It was this very foresty aesthetic. The room, the set design for their rooms and stuff was really cool with trees in it and everything. A little cheesy. I like that. It gave me Xena vibes, which is very formative for me. So I like that. Kind of a little video gamey, and that we must go here and do the thing, and you literally have to solve a puzzle for a mechanism to get a door to open and stuff. Mm. Plot wise, as I was watching it, I was hearing rumblings that the plot was not very good. That wasn't why I was there, so I didn't care. And I'd literally zone out sometimes. So if plot is your thing, apparently the plot doesn't make any sense. I did not care. Because the part that I cared about eventually is it turns out that Yibo's character was poisoned as a child, but some monks were able to stop it from killing him, but then he reactivates it to save her. I don't know. It's very video gamey or whatever.
Nice of him, I guess.
He has to basically he can't use his super martial arts because if he does, they had to suppress that part of him because that's the poison was in there. I don't know. But there's a lot of her running off to save him. And I like that. There's a lot of literal ponytail, pigtail pulling, which was really fantastic because he would do it and then she would do it back to him.
Right.
And I enjoyed that. And he just basically follows her around with stars in his eyes the entire time. And I'm a very big fan of that. And he'll literally say things to her you'll fight your way out of trouble. I will talk our way out of trouble. Things I don't aspire to be either a general or a scholar, only a maid who does my wife's hair.
That's so cute. I love that.
So they were very, very adorable the whole way through. I mean, there was, like, the pain period. Like, I don't, you know, I don't live watch, but I could not resist it. And I did have to stop in there for a little while to, like, let it catch up ahead of me so that I could, like, go through the pain really fast. Because I didn't want to, but it's, to me, it's like, if you just want, like, banter and cuteness and adventure in a fantastical setting or whatever, then that would be for you. But if you care for the plot to make any sense, and I mean, I assumed that the bad guys were just the bad guys because it seemed like a very, not the actual Warring States period, because I don't know anything about Chinese history, but I know, like, it felt like that, you know, like, just political machinations, and I'm a warlord, and yada, but.
Which is kind of like how The Untamed was, too. I feel like it's a lot of, like, Chinese historical drama, historical fantasy dramas are like that, where you're like, do I care about what's happening in the background of the cute things that are happening in front of me? No. I do not.
Maybe it's not made for you. It's not made for the scholars anyway.
Right, exactly. It's made for those who want to do their wives' hair. But I watched the first two episodes of it. And I had thought it was really cute, and I was like looking forward to more, but then I got, you know, too many things were happening, so I could not continue. But I will, with this recommendation, I will be picking it back up. I'm very much looking forward to it. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing Wang Yibo show emotions. So
yes, she does. Well, and there's so many women in it. It was really fair. Like, enough that when, like, the one woman, like, really one female character is killed off, I was sad because I liked her, but you're, like, not mad because there's like lots of others. And there's even, like, one of the main two villains is a woman as well. And I was like,
oh, nice.
She's the one who plays in Yibo as a child. So I was just like, I'm looking forward to Afei killing you eventually because, like, you're going around poisoning kids. Like,
we can't have that.
But the main guy, he was, I don't know what his problem was. Like, I don't care. I was just like, I want to watch Afei kill everybody. And the great part is that, like, Zeon wants to watch Afei kill everybody. So it's, I'm a big fan of that.
your goals are united. Like,
the one running gag they have is that she always breaks her swords. And so he's just, like, literally always gifting her swords. The first time he goes to get one, the blacksmith is like, shouldn't you get, like, this or this or this for your girlfriend? She's like, and he's like, no. Like, she really likes swords, though. And then finally it culminates in him being able to make her one. And it was very sweet.
That's sweet.
It was cute. There's a funny plot line where it's his godbrother. It's like the current prince, the current dynasty. I don't understand how this could work. I don't understand how he could be buddy-buddy with the current dynasty and not be, like, seen as, like, a threat, as, like, the survivor, and the fact that he can be acknowledged. I get that, like, other people who were not in the line to the throne or whatever would acknowledge him as your highness or whatever, because whether or not his current dynasty is in charge, I get it, but, like, the fact that he could be, like, really close with the current, I was like, I don't care. Maybe that was explained, and I zoomed down during that part. I don't know. But, like, his brother has a crush on, like, Afei, and, like, shows up and tries to, like, propose to her, and it's very funny. Yeah, I liked it a lot. It's cute. And so I am picking my way through a modern set C drama called Go Ahead that I started. I told you about it at the beginning.
That's right. You did tell me about it. Yeah.
I Reply vibes, like Reply series vibes. It kind of slowed down a little bit. Well, because what I was really invested in was the, like, to me, two dads, basically, like middle-aged.
Right, yeah.
And then they were kind of not there for several episodes, and so I, like, because it's like this found family sort of situation where, like, you have, like, neighbors, like, upstairs, downstairs neighbors in this apartment building, and, like, you have one family, and it's a widower and his daughter, and then moves in upstairs is, like, a husband and wife and their son, and then through various circumstances, the two dads end up, like, the wife has left and they've acquired another child. Like, somehow. And they're, like, they effectively raise the kids together.
Okay.
It's really, really cute. Mm-hmm. But then the main plot line is supposed to be that, like, of the three kids who view each other as siblings, like, the two of them start dating or whatever. And I needed to explain a little bit better why these two. Like, why she, I mean, I could see, you could kind of buy it. They were, like, 10. Maybe when they all started getting raised together, which is, like, right around that age.
Borderline, right, yeah.
But, like, I felt like, and so I would have, if they had sat down and really been, like, this is why these two like each other, that she's not into him. Like, I would have bought it, I think, but it never really did that. And even had, like, the other brother have, like, a crush on her, and she's like, but her way of, I don't know. I didn't, but once we got over that, and they're together, and that drama was passed, then I'm like, fine, I'll accept you together, I don't care. But, like, giving me the two middle-aged dads for several episodes, and also this romantic drama between the three of them, I just didn't care. But now it's given the three of them other plot lines with, like, the parents who abandoned them coming back into their lives in various levels, and them having to, like, deal with that and stuff. And so I'm invested in that, because then there's a family dynamic again, now that they're not, like, fighting. Stupid. And the dads are back. And I'm, like, really curious to see how they, because they're sort of teasing this one storyline where one of the dads is, like, being matchmade in the neighborhood, but he seems to be, like, half oblivious to it. So I'm, like, I'm heavily invested in seeing, like, where they go with that. And if they just, like, because the one dad literally said when his daughter calls and is, like, pushing him toward this woman or toward anybody and dating, he's like, oh, no, like, your other dad and I have, like, just, like, I'm not interested in that. Like, we're going to retire together. We're going to, like, live together and, like, in a retirement home. So I'm, like, heavily invested to see if that's how it is. So it's cute in places. Like, when it focuses on the family stuff and, like, the neighborhood shenanigans, but I didn't think the romantic drama was done very well. Because it never explains why he... They imply that from the very beginning, the male lead only ever saw her like that, which is, like, fine, but then he's also, like, he, like, leaves to go to Singapore and live with his mom for, like, several years, and then, like, shows back up so that he can, like, marry her, and then, but it was, like, 0 to 60 on it. And it was, like, your relationship has never been anything but siblings, and you've been gone since you were 16 or so.
Oh, that's a little bit weird. It's a little bit weird.
You show back up and you're like, immediately like, I want to date you. Like, you need, there's a transition period required here.
It is really funny, actually.
That's where I
say, like, a little bit, it's like a little bit like there's like a Barry and Iris in the Flash situation, except that like it was established that he had a crush on her. And then that's why he was like, I don't like living here. Because
That's what it's like 10, like they're right around the right age where I could buy this, but you had to throw the other brother in there. And that still can be done well. You could still navigate, like, yeah, she is going to just be attracted to the one of them or whatever, but it just kind of didn't. And I was like, where are my dads? Bring my dads back. They're so domestic all of the time. They'll sit there and like give each other massages at the end of the day. Like, they technically their apartments are like, no, they're like, they'll cut to a scene and the one guy is like rubbing the other guy's shoulders and I'm like, oh my god.
You're like, okay.
Their apartments are above each other, like one is, and then but they like they all eat together. Like they just treat the apartments as if it's there's, you have to go out into the hallway to use the stairs to get to the second floor of your house, basically. Like, your bedroom is up here, mine is down here, but we all eat together, you know, every day. Like, one dad makes breakfast. The other one is the one who's constantly giving him an allowance because he's like, well, you're raising the kids. I'm like, oh my god.
That's cute.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it would be best because I'm used to binging and I think that's why I'm going through this so slow. It's like a kind of, when you're in the mood for it, watch a couple episodes kind of a thing. But I don't know that it's really, to me, it wasn't very bingey because there was a big slot to get through it in the middle. But I'm close to the, I'm on like around episode 30 of 40. So.
Okay. I accept this. I accept this. Kind of sounds like how I, although obviously probably less frustrating because probably care about the lead couple less, but like, reminds me how I felt about In Time With You. Is that what it was called? So I was like, well, this is like a really cute situation, and like I like the whole concept, but then like in the middle, I'm like, oh my god, if y'all just don't.
Oh no, it was In Time With You. Just thought, oh, especially like watching it later, like it was very much a product. Like a lot of dramas were like more dramas were like that back then.
Yeah.
Now we've kind of moved away from that, but yeah, I'm pretty sure I just hopped forward. I think I just skipped a couple episodes of In Time With You. I like looked it up online. I was like, I don't need to see this.
But yeah, I mean, I remember when I first, you know, was recommended Go Ahead, and so now I feel like I've gotten like two reviews from friends who were like, hey, you know, it was cute. So I was like, you know, all right, good enough to put on a few episodes. I can do it.
I would definitely watch Legend of Fae before.
Yes, Legend of Fae is one that's very high on my list.
And the reply comparisons reply series is better than
that's good to know. That's good to know.
Well, I'm not to 94. I haven't watched 94.
Well, it won't be better than that. I mean, unless it was horrible, it won't be better than 94. Wait, doesn't make sense. Unless it's horrible, it won't be worse than 94 is what I meant to say. It has to be better than 94. The opposite. 94 is so bad. But, you know, it is also the one that leaned the hardest into the sibling relationship. So maybe it is kind of like that. Because it was super weird. I was like, okay, you literally call it, like, it's literally like he is your brother. He literally came in to replace your brother. This is very weird. What is happening? But anyway. One I have not watched. And I think it's like the IKEA. I don't know if you guys, know the IKEA app. I'm so tired of this app.
I know what you're referring to.
Yeah. I don't understand how to use it, A. And then B, like, they get episodes a little bit earlier than Vicky does. So, like, Vicky starts getting episodes of the same show, like, sometimes weeks later. And, yes. But with IKEA, half of the shows that are supposed to be on there are actually not on there in the US, so I can't find them, but they don't specify. So I just go, whatever. So anyway, Apple Dog's Time, Go-Go's Good 2, even though it is actually not a 2, is on IKEA, but it's also on Viki, just at a slower pace, or starting later, or whatever. So for any of you who loved Go-Go Squid, and you were like, I just love Hu Yitan's slow, like, stone face, and the way that he doesn't ever express any emotions, but looks so sexy while doing it, then you can watch Go-Go Squid 2, and that is me. I am that person. No expression face. So I was super excited because I was always like, you know, in have both of you watched Go-Go Squid or just Angela?
I have not watched Go-Go Squid.
Angela, neither of you. Oh my god. Okay, so Go-Go Squid is a super cute. I definitely recommend that one. It's super cute. She's a little bit of a stalker. The female lead's a little bit of a stalker, but it's okay because he's into it. It's about this like group of, I don't know what they do, some kind of like Olympiad computer hacking game. I don't know what the game is, but it's something with computers. And China is very good at it, and their team is very good at representing China. And then this girl is, she's like, she's also a computer engineer, but like maybe like a game designer. But like they hardly lean into her skills, of course. But she is going to school for it, and she does at some point design them a little game to help them train better. So, you know, she's very useful. So she is in love with leader of this team. Okay. Leader of team. And so the Go-Go Squid is all their love story, plus the team winning things. But I think China, like, censored it. Like, they were mad about throwing too much of the game. I don't know. You know China, sometimes they just do weird things. So, like, the latter, like, 4 or 6 episodes just don't really make sense because they don't really show you the competition that the whole show is based around. Like, no, too much of this competition. But anyway.
Weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. But anyway.
Weird choice, but okay.
On the same squad is the cousin of the male lead, Hu Yitian. And I remember, because this was like right after Love So Beautiful, so I was like, oh man, this guy's in it. He's gonna be like the second male lead or whatever. He's gonna have like a super important role with his sexy stone face. He doesn't. He barely does anything. He almost never speaks. He just like looks awkwardly at his cousin and his cousin's love interest. And also it's revealed that he's in love with his cousin's ex-girlfriend, who is the leader of a rival, or the second leader, whatever, of a rival squad, of a rival team. Okay, so then I was super excited. I was like, oh my god, we're going to develop this. We did not develop this love story. Now, finally, Go-Go Squid 2, Apple Dog's Time. Apple Dog is the name of the girl that is the ex, who the cousin's in love with. So now it's a show based around her and something she does, and he is the male lead in it. So I was like, it's my time to shine. I'm so fucking excited. I can't wait. They recast the female lead. It's not even her anymore. So it's just some other actress with the same name. I'm like, okay, fine. And also they changed it from the game that China won't let you show to robotics. So I guess China will let you show robotics, maybe.
We'll find out.
We'll find out if China lets you show robotics.
That's not how I found out Untamed was also censored for ghosts.
Oh.
Because you're not allowed to show ghosts. Right. I was like, why did someone even adapt this? Like, how do they show them? Because there's so many more ghosts in the novel. Who looked at this and was like, this novel that is about ghosts and male romance, and I can't show either of these.
But hey, they did it and it worked. They made it happen. That's proof that a creative mind can get you anywhere. So anyway, so they changed to robotics. And also the timeline's super unclear. Like, I think it starts off like 7 years before the events of Go-Go Squid, but it will somehow end up past the events of Go Go Squid so that you will see how he fell in love with her and how they will get together, but in an alternate universe where they are doing robotics and that's the game they were actually doing. Anyway, so far I've heard it's really cute, other than, you know, it's not the same woman, and it's basically like, some people are like, you just have to watch it like it's totally separate, it has nothing to do with Go Go Squid. And then people are like, the timeline clearly matches up. You're obviously not watching it right. So I don't know. We'll find out which part I fall under. I know that the main couple from Go Go Squid is also in it as like guest stars. So obviously it is meant to be in the same universe. We'll just see what they, I hope that we see them doing robotics at some point instead of doing their Capture the Flag game. I think it was literally called Capture the Flag, actually. I think it's called CTF. That's the name of the game that they weren't allowed to show. That was very confusing to me, because I kept thinking they'd be playing Capture the Flag, but they were not. There's just like a little computer blip, that's the flag that you have to capture.
They should have changed it to playing Capture the Flag and not Robotics.
Yeah, literally Capture the Flag.
Is there like some sort of political symbolism or whatever that Capture the Flag is supposed to represent? Why can't they just make a computer game be a computer game? Right?
Yeah, right? I don't know. Anyway, so this has been a very long, extended preview for a show I have not watched, but so far it sounds like it's going pretty well. It has like an 8.2 on my drama list, which is like, you know, average. And the main argument is just, is this in the correct timeline or not? So sounds like it's going well. I heard it's like very cute, like normal rom-com tropes, which is what I'm here for. When I watch my Chinese dramas, it's because I want my rom-com tropes or I want a fantasy historical that is neither fantasy nor history, because they can't be ghosts and they're not actually set in history. So wonderful. Now, Camille has barely spoken, so it is time for her to take the lead in Filipino dramas.
Thank you. Since I'm the only Filipino, then I might as well start. There are a couple of things that Angela and I actually watched, so I think it'll be cool for us to both talk about them. They're movies, though, not series. Two movies that we both watched. BL movies as well. But like before that, maybe I'll give like a bit of context on how we watched them, because I think at least when it comes to like digital productions with the Philippines, we're really, really new at it. So like there are new platforms, there are new ways of watching these things, and it's still quite experimental. So I'll actually ask Angela to share, like, how was your experience? Because for me, it was pretty straightforward, because there are lots of guides and whatever. So, like, the first movie, I guess, should we start with, you want to start with Hello Stranger, the movie, or The Boy Foretold by the Stars?
I don't remember as much about The Boy Foretold by the Stars, because that was a while ago. Okay. When you were asking about the production, I felt like that was easier to watch. I mean, you just sent me a link, right, and I watched.
Yes. I know. So I'll give a bit of context. I'll start with that then, because we don't have. I also don't remember much about it at this point, because it's not that fresh. And anyway, but like, in part of the greater context, this is really weird Filipino tradition of every Christmas time, we have a film festival called the Metro Manila Film Festival. And we say film festival, but it's not necessarily like really good films. It's just that for that period, for like 2 weeks of Christmas, the holiday season, no foreign films are allowed to be shown in theaters.
Oh, that's so cool, that's like, actually. That's a really good idea.
So that's just to boost, you know, local film industries, and which is, like, kind of weird for Hollywood, because that's when, like, the big blockbusters come out, like the Star Wars films or the Marvel films. But really, they're pretty serious, so none of those Hollywood films come out at Christmas, and we're all forced. That's the only time that you have as a vacation, that you're forced to pick, like, out of 10 local films that you have to watch with your family or whatever. And they're like staples. There's always like a horror movie. There are always like some dramas, comedies, slapstick, really bad, long franchise slapstick comedies and stuff. So anyway, since we are still until now in quarantine, and it's going to be a year by March, it's going to be like a full year. So last year they decided to still have that, the film festival, but all online. So that was an experiment. So they put all the films online. You could rent the film for like a day or two, or 48 hours. You pay, it's actually quite cheap, a lot cheaper than like a cinema ticket would have been. Then you can rent it, you can watch it, and then you can rent it again, and all for a period, uh-huh, for the same period of time, basically like 2 weeks. So there are about 10 films as well. then I was asking my friends, which is worth watching? They were like, oh, there are only probably about two of those. I'm like, okay, I'll support the industry. And one was The Boy Foretold by the Stars. The other one is Fangirl. I don't know if I'm going to talk about that later, but that was the one that won Best Picture because they also have like an awards thing at the end. And, like, there's sometimes not a lot of choice. So like the one that's mildly good is what wins Best Picture, basically. So, but Boy Foretold by the Stars is pretty cute. So they had a platform for that. And then later on, when we talk about Hello Stranger, the movie, there's another platform for that. That, like, that website was basically where you could buy tickets to events and things before. So they're trying to, like, revamp it to be a sort of streaming rent, streaming platform or whatever. And maybe Angela will say later if it was kind of weird and not so straightforward to use. Because I think we're still really new at it. So Boy Foretold by the Stars was billed as like the first BL movie in the Philippines. Oh. Well, I guess, well, we're talking BL maybe because the genre is pretty new for us and we've only had like web series and dramas. So for movies, there have been movies about like gay couples or same-sex couples before, but not like this. So we're just like basically a really cutesy rom-com, but with two male leads. Like, it was really weird because like the title is The Boy Foretold by the Stars, so you have this whole destiny mystical element to it, and then it's also set in like this all boys Catholic school and set during like their yearly spiritual retreat, so there's like a really weird religious element to it as well. It's kind of, well, that's also very Filipino. You can't really get rid of that aspect of the culture, and it was right. Interesting to see how they wove that in.
My dad's a pastor. I grew up going to retreats like that. So it was actually something I related. It felt really familiar to me. So, yeah.
But that was cute.
Like, just
it's
the culture. It's almost weird to, like, sink back in it. But,
right.
And then there were elements of it that were a little bit different, you know, because they're different cultures. But, like, oh, yeah, people talk like this still. Like, that's what it felt like.
I can confirm that they do. it's pretty much, well, it was an all boys school, but it's like pretty much, I didn't go to an all girls school. I went to a co-ed school, but that is basically how our retreats run. And you always have these, like, the one of the male leads was one of those really eager volunteers who always helps organize the retreats and who's really close with like the priests and the brothers who do it. And then his love interest was, of course, a jock who's never been to the retreat before or whatever. But when he joins and signs up, he finds himself and in the process finds love in this guy who's the volunteer. Well, it was really cute. It was pretty much a rom-com. And it had all, like, I guess, the familiar BL tropes. The other guy, the jock, had was like, recovering from a breakup with a girl or whatever, and then he realizes that he falls in love with this other guy, and there's this whole the destiny element, because the first guy, Dominic, his name was Dominic, he and his other gay friend go to like Chinatown to Quiapo, where they meet like a fortune teller for fun, and they're like, so tell me about like my true love or whatever, and they're like, okay, you're gonna have like these three signs. I don't even remember the signs. Like one, some like something about the stars, something about king, and something about rain. So those are three signs that this person is your soulmate. And at first he's like, I don't believe in that stuff. Whatever. And then when he meets this other guy, the signs kind of start happening and he starts to think, maybe you are like my destiny or whatever. It's really cute. And yeah. It ended quite abruptly, to be honest, because like the girlfriend came back and then there was a thing, but in the end, like they chose each other and it was nice. I was just really bothered by some of the casting decisions because the leads at least look like they were high schoolers because they're supposed to be in high school, but then like some of the friends were, well, some of them are people I actually know or know of, and I'm like, you guys are in your 30s. It's not, there's only so much suspension of disbelief I can like muster up for this kind of thing. The girlfriend also is like, she's a really good theater actress, but also like, you're like 27, 25 or something. No way you're like a high schooler. So like, stuff like that was bothering, and those are the really weird details that bother me more, because like the story was not so substantive when you think about it. It's just cutesy. It's like a way of passing time. And like, it's good for the genre, I guess, that we started with something that's fairly light, so that people are, I mean, I don't think it was very controversial. It didn't really shock anyone. There's just nothing really shocking about it anyway. So I said, well, if this is gonna get like the BL genre into the mainstream, I'm all for it. Yeah. It was cutesy.
That reminds me of Love, Simon. Just the fact that it's like, you know, sometimes you want to have just like a really cute rom-com. It just so happens that you change the gender because people of any gender can have any kind of romance.
Right. So like, I'm done talking about like boy for toe. Like, I'll pass it on to Angela first before anything else. If you have any thoughts on
it. Like, for me, coming from K-dramas, at least the like adult actor running around as a love interest was a woman and not a man with like a 15-year-old actress, because that's what happens in K-dramas all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So but yeah, no, from what you said, like, and I thought I liked how it explored, like, that it never had to confront, like, he could have his faith and we could also have this. So coming from the US, when we explore those two things together, it's usually very fractious. Mm. Because that is usually how it is here. So it was just really refreshing that it didn't have that. Like, they even had the priest calling out homophobia at one point. That was really cool. Like, showing these, like, teen boys about it. And just that, you know, because again, like you said, like, Dominic, his faith is really important to him and who he was. But that was just an element of his character. And then this, like, fortune that he was following or not to find his true love as a little high school boy was also just something that was happening to him. And it was just, that was really sweet, I thought. So yeah, it was cute. And it was weird the way that I was like, I really, like, this setting is very, very familiar to me.
Was it?
I go into stuff like that all of the time. So I was, yeah, that was cool to me. I was like, I've never seen rom-com set in this setting before, actually, because they would discourage that.
Yeah, I think it was maybe a bit of a stretch.
You know, Christian teens' heads in the States. This is going to happen. So it's cute.
To be fair, I don't think that would be very realistic even here. I think it's just that was the fantasy element to me, not the foretelling, not anything else. Like, wow, they're so accepting. And yeah, you'd have like the priest. They had a class where the priest is basically, God loves all of you and accepts all the gays. And I wish that was true. Like, I wish we were that.
They're trying to speak that into existence.
Yeah.
They're making it happen.
So why not? Yeah, so great. Great if it happens. I didn't see any, well, I looked at all the local publications. I didn't see any controversy. I didn't see anyone making a big fuss about it. So I said, that's a good sign, because usually people make a big fuss about the smallest things here. And I said, maybe like 10 years ago, this would have been huge, like controversial. But now I'm like, I guess we're evolving as a society. So that's a good sign. Great. So there. The other film I did watch from that film festival that Angela did watch was called Fangirl. I'll just go through it really quickly. So that's the one that won the award for best film. I think it's also done the rounds in like some of the international film festivals.
Oh, that's
so like
great.
At first you're like, have you heard it? Heard about it?
Yeah, I have not heard about it outside of from you now, but I'm sounds very happy. I'm happy for them.
It's intriguing. It's a dark one for sure. So it's basically a critique of like fangirl culture and toxic celebrity idolizing your celebrity crush kind of culture. So it's about a fangirl, like a high school girl who's obsessed with one, like a really handsome actor. And it then becomes like, and then she goes to a mall show where he's promoting one of his new like rom-coms. And then in a really stalkery way, she like goes and hides herself at the back of his truck. And then he drives off because he's going to a house in the province somewhere. And then then the movie becomes more like a two-hander, and then they're just both together and stuff happens. A lot of suspension of disbelief is really required because, anyway, I'll get into that in a minute. But like, it's an interesting study because when it's the two of them, from one perspective, you're like, here's a really naive, like, she was really stalkery, like, you really felt like uncomfortable for the actor. It's like, she's just really invading his privacy. she's on the back of the truck, and at one point, like, he's peeing on the side of the road, and her cell phone is up, and it's like, girl, it was just like, stop, it's so disturbing. So half the film, you're like, not really on her side. Like, you're trying to remind yourself she's a child, she's, you know, this, the culture is a bad influence on her, et cetera, et cetera. But also, like, this is a very disturbing fan behavior, and you feel bad. No matter how much of a dick the actor turns out to be, you don't have a right to invade his privacy like that. But, and it was interesting because the actor, whose name is Paolo Avellino, played a fictional version of himself. So his name in the film was still Paolo Avellino. And the things that she references when she meets him and she's so excited, I'm your biggest fan, I've watched your this, are real shows and real films that he's been in. So you're like, bold, that's interesting. Paolo.
Yeah.
And of course he plays like a really, I've seen him like in press things. So I like, this feels like a weird, it's so meta because I've also seen him in doing promotions. But yeah, so he plays like a really like monstrous version of the actor who turns out to be, you know, the complete opposite of his wonderful teen idol persona who turns out to be like, but yeah, so monstrous and so grotesque that it becomes unbelievable because it's like they wanted to load all possible vices on this character. So like she finds out that, oh no, he's doing drugs and drinking and having sex with prostitutes and he has a potty mouth and every imaginable like bad trait they loaded onto him as it just to like shatter her illusion of him. And then there were like fantasy scenes where it was lighted differently and she would imagine like kissing him or dancing with him and imagine his like celebrity persona and then juxtapose against this grimy guy. And I wish they would have done it in a way that still portrayed him in a human light because people can have their flaws and still be human. And that should be the one shattering your illusions of your idol, right? They're actually human beings and not perfect. But then this went too far, went too much in the extreme. They really just made him a monster. And at the start, you're like, yeah, so I can't even sympathize with him and her invading his privacy and, you know, following him all the way to this isolated house in the province, which also didn't make sense to me. Like, there's no way an actor that rich and that popular would have this ramshackle mansion, like almost like a haunted house, like, by himself, it's not furnished, he has no like servants with him, like that's not gonna happen. He has no bodyguards or drivers, he's alone, like no, he would have a swanky condo somewhere in the city. Like, this is not real. And like the moment he found out she was there, he was really rude to her, he's really angry that she was there, of course, you know, invading his privacy. I'm like, no, these actors in real life are very well trained in PR. They know that, like, if there's a fan there with her phone ready to post anything in social media,
right,
they have
right.
to be on their best behavior. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah. Because at one point she was taking pictures, again, creepy pictures of him, and he was like, you better delete that. She's not going to. You know she's not going to. So no. So, like, that was so unreal to me. These actors are trained. They know how to keep their image. So as soon as one fan is there, they put the persona back on, right? You're not gonna put it in. But yeah, then it becomes really, really dark towards the end, and it's just unpleasant. And there's an iffy, like, was that or not a rape scene? And I don't want to see that. So like,
God,
yeah. So yeah, and then it turns out that's why she got so obsessed with this celebrity culture, was because she's really poor and living in a miserable home situation. Her mother has like an abusive boyfriend, blah blah blah. This is so miserable. So yeah, so rom-coms and idols are her escape. But even at the end of the film, she doesn't even have that anymore because she shattered her illusion of her perfect. So I'm like, don't call this film. Well, it is about a fangirl, but like, this is not selling it because it's so dark. It's really dark.
So it's a cautionary tale. So don't be a fangirl.
Don't be a fangirl. Your idols will disappoint you. I mean, that's the basic thread of it. Your idols will disappoint you. You didn't have to go to there, basically. It was too dark in the end. But I will say that the two actors were really great. So they both won, like, the best actor, best actress awards.
Oh,
especially
good.
The girl, who's really, yeah, luckily, like, she plays a 16-year-old, but she's actually 22. So, like, whew, for some of the scenes, like, thank you. I'm glad she's not 16, basically. I'm not, at least she's not really 16, but she was really good. And Paolo as well. So it really is, again, a really bold choice of him to do that. And because you know that part of the whole culture is some people can separate fantasy from reality. So I'm like, I can, because he is obviously not like that. But if there are fans who watch that and are like, ooh, maybe he is that, like monsters in real life.
Right, so that would be, that's gonna be awkward.
I mean, he hasn't lost any projects yet. It's actually been good for him. He likes to take on a challenge because... Oh, he is in another film that I think is on Netflix. So I think it's a historical Filipino film called Goyo, The Boy General. So there are two films. There's like one about Philippine history. It's called General Luna. And then the sequel, he was there, his character is there also. And then his own like standalone film, which is about a boy general named Gregorio Del Pilar. So I don't know if you would see him on Netflix. That's where he's been. But Fangirl was cool. It was a good, dark, creepy exercise, but I think necessary because I really don't know like how the celebrity culture is like in Korea or other countries or even in the US. I wouldn't say it's the same here. People can get really obsessed with their idols to the point of that. Not that I think it would have been possible because he would have been surrounded by like security people for sure.
Right.
But yeah, if only to illustrate that, don't be obsessed with your actors because they will disappoint you. So that's Fangirl. So those are the two films I watched from that film festival because the others look like not so great and I don't want to rent them anymore. Then we did what we watched that I think just today because it just came out Friday.
Oh my god.
Was Hello Stranger the movie. So I think we've talked about Hello Stranger the series. And
yes.
Then
yes, you did.
The movie they've been, I watch TV, so they've been showing the trailer and reminding me almost every day that the movie's coming out this Friday. So I said, okay, I think I'm going to go see that. So we had to use a different website for that. And yeah, it was kind of weird to set it up. But in the end, I was able to watch it. And I have a lot of emotions. Also because it's so fresh. Because like it's been probably an hour and a half since I finished it. So it's it's really still up there. And I really enjoyed the series as well. So I'd say though that a lot of the conflict is super contrived and you know it was just a plot device to add some more drama and up the ante, but didn't really need that. But it was an excuse to put them all in a retreat again, but like a literary camp, like writing boot camp in a resort. And the best part is I feel like this is a fantasy film because it's set in an era where the pandemic is over.
Yeah, Xavier literally says,
"Love that for them."
They're like, oh, it's great. Remember last year when we had the pandemic, and I was like, "Wow, this is science fiction. This isn't real."
At the beginning, they had a disclaimer that they filmed this in accordance with COVID protocols. Like, people are going to get confused when they hear this line later. And then, I guess they wanted to, like, they felt like they had to say that, so, like, since Hello Stranger was about the pandemic.
Yes.
But here, they were like, if we acknowledge that the pandemic is still ongoing, it would be totally unconscionable.
There's no way that they could have done something like this in a resort.
It was required from the unit, because that's why they had to force everybody to be there. They were like, from your unit, you must go for a week to go to the unit. So they were like, we have to throw a line in there.
Yeah. That was so funny to me. I was like, wow, because I am living here in the reality of I'm still working from home. I barely go out and we still have to walk around in masks and face shields. And they're just living their lives and like, good for them. And the resort was really beautiful and I still don't know where it is, but I need to know where it is so that after the pandemic for real,
you can go
to go there.
You think
it is a negative 5 degrees outside right now here, Celsius. Celsius, Fahrenheit's like 20 something. So just like watching this movie, I was like, it looks so warm.
It's so beautiful. It's like sunset by the beach, like the waves. They had like campfires and oh my god.
Yeah, this movie is peak fantasy aesthetic right now.
Basically. Something to look forward to post pandemic, whatever that is. Yeah. We don't even have vaccines. And I mean, like, the reality is we're still trying to convince people to get vaccinated. We still don't have enough vaccines for the whole country. And they're saying things like, maybe we're going to get vaccinated by 2023. And if we're still alive by then, thanks. So what is this movie going to be like? This is what life could be like someday again. And that's what I cared more than the story. But like, the story was still there and it's great. And it's great to see the characters. Yeah, because like Angela said, the series is really like a Zoom series. It's mm-hmm. just video calls. So it was fun to see like even like the friend group of Miko Kukai, Seth and Junjun together in a car, like being friends, just interacting. And you know that the pandemic has gotten you to think like this used to be so normal before all this, and now seeing people in a car on a road trip together is just so emotional.
Just getting to see them so together much. Like that, like more so than you could where they're each individually on their own Zoom call to see the different kind of dynamics yeah. they have with each other. Or Junjun with everybody, like justice for Junjun. This guy needs somebody to put him first and be his emotional support in his life. Because he's yeah. clearly around doing it for everyone. He is even doing it for like one of his friend's romantic rivals. He's out there giving like her yes. emotional support. Like I was like,
that was a really good moment. But like what about Junjun really though? Moment.
Yeah. He just, like, I guess like, he must have wanted, because, like, that was the best conflict in the series, was when Junjun and all his other friends called Miko the lead out for, like, being really self-obsessed.
Yeah.
Kind of like in the Never Have I Ever series, Tatiana, that was on Netflix, we watched, where, like, the main lead is so wrapped up in their romantic drama, they don't notice the shit that's happening with their friends, and their friends call them out on it. But, and so I was, like, hoping Junjun would get more for himself in this movie, but no, he's like, I'm everybody's now.
Basically, I'm like, Junjun, man.
Right, maybe he's going to be a psychiatrist.
he would be really good at it. You see, literally everyone's, this is my emotional support, Junjun. For everyone.
Anyway. I like Kapolei and Seth's conflict. I thought that was a really good conflict for them.
Yeah.
That, like, she wasn't comfortable introducing him to her family yet. And he, like, totally switched academic tracks without telling her. He told the other friend first. And that was, like, a really good, like, new couple, like, dynamic. Because, like, what does it matter if they actually go to med school together? But it wasn't about that. It was that, like, he would not share something that he's going through in his life with her.
Yeah.
Like, that's really what she was heard about. And I was like, that was good. But their conflict didn't make any sense at all.
When Seth and Kukai had, like, a real conflict. Though, and I wish we had spent more time with them, of course, they're not the leads. But I really loved their whole plot in the series. And it was good that they even, at least when they had one scene together, he reminded her that, you know, you used to be in love with Miko. And that became a whole thing. And I said, that's good that you referred back to it. Like, is it because you don't think I'm good enough to meet your family because I'm not like Miko, who's like an achiever, ambitious, etc.? Is that the reason? But so that was like a really good thing to explore. But of course, like the savior Miko thing was so. Also, I feel bad for what they did with Kristoff's character, because in the series she was pretty cool. Like she was cool with it, and then suddenly, conveniently, she becomes like this sort of emotionally manipulative girlfriend, right? Who has issues, etc. And I'm like, she deserves better than that. Come on, but yeah, she became the reason basically why they couldn't get together. And it's also kind of a cop out for those who watched the series, and I felt really satisfied by the finale, because I thought, yes, that's it. That's a strong note to end on. But in the movie, just so they can contrive this whole drama. Oh, by the way, like literally like I think minutes after that moment, Crystal calls him up. Oh, she's in tears. I have to comfort my ex-girlfriend. So yeah, we're maybe not gonna get together. That's a cop-out.
Like, it doesn't make any sense. It erased the last few episodes of Hello Strangers' romantic development between the leads, because they were basically like showing that they literally broke up the same day that they got together. It's like, why would you do that? Like, if you want to do a, you know, they've broken up and now they're coming back together situation, you can give it a little bit more of a time jump, maybe.
No.
But The plotline reminded me a lot of, like, early 2000s K-dramas, where he's, like, he's not actually, he's still in love with the main character, but the ex shows up and wants him, and he feels guilty to the ex, so he stays with the ex out of that guilt, and it drove me crazy when they would do it in K-dramas, because it's like, you're hurting everybody in this equation, and, like, if you would stay with an ex out of a sense of guilt, you must not really love the person you say you love.
That's because, not like, fair.
Either. You can't, like, how come you're okay with hurting them so that you won't hurt somebody you're supposed to care about less? Like, there's zero logic to it at all. And her reason, she was upset because her parents were divorcing. I was like, you're college student. Like, it sucks, but, like, you're not a child, you know? Like, call up somebody else. Like, call another. It reminded me,
Tell
the
boys I've mean, how loved. Could he not have other friends, right? How is he your only friend?
Which actually makes sense, because To All the Boys I Loved Before is very influenced by K-dramas. So, like, this idea that you can only go to your ex-boyfriend for emotional support when your parents are splitting up, basically. Like, no. Do you have?
No.
And they had to still come around and be, like, realizing what she was doing. So that was really cool. She wasn't stereotypical villain through the end. But it was like, you literally, you guys went through this already. The last two episodes of Hello Stranger were like him being with Crystal and her realizing he didn't care about her anymore. And like them, so like, it didn't make any sense.
Basically, it was just so bad for Crystal's character, because she got a lot of good feedback from the series by being this really mature and perceptive enough person. Like, no, he doesn't love me. He's in love with someone else. And I don't know what happened. Did they retcon her character just for this conflict? Because, I mean, there couldn't be any other conflict. Couldn't be something else. But, and even that, like, that was so cheesy, that game that they had where, like, literally there's just the three of them left. Oh no, who will he choose? Okay.
I love that they chose each other.
It's cute, though, that they chose each other in the end. The girlfriend and the love interest chose each other and left. So you're standing there awkwardly.
It was like a who gets to be out in the game kind of a deal. But like, no, I was literally writing the, because they had all the building blocks for an alternate conflict, because it had that storyline where like Miko had the author who really looked up to, who had written the series of like short stories about coming out and being in the closet and then coming out, and then have them in this, you know, uni retreat situation. And if you did want to set it not very long since the end of the finale, you could have made it about them, because they've been in Zoom classes this whole time, right? So maybe this is like the first big hurrah from the university, and now they have to navigate if they want to come out in public, and like they have various levels of comfort with that. And it's mirrored by Miko like reading this book and maybe admiring this guy who's gone through that journey. Or like, I was like, I have written this for you. Here it is. You just do that with me. I feel like that would get you through, you know, a 90-minute long movie easily with stuff going on with the other people. And then you could even still have that little jealous tension that they wanted to have.
Yeah.
With like Miko and Xavier and the guy, Simon. The author,
Simon.
Yeah. Which got so annoying, because like Xavier's done all this shit to Miko. He basically like ditched his new boyfriend for his ex because she was sad because her parents were splitting up. Mm. And like, but then when she lets him go, he immediately runs to Miko and is pissed when Miko's like, not really sure about it. Like, he's acting really jealous and nasty about it. It's like what? And they did have a good confrontation about that, and I liked it. And that, you know, he did have to go farther than just being like, oh, I'm ready now. But you still could have had that sort of jealousy tension with making it a little bit more unfounded, or make it make sense for all of them. Like, they might be out to their immediate friend groups, but coming out is a constant process. Sometimes you have to do it multiple times in multiple different social circles or professional circles. And I feel like they could have.
I mean, they kind of tried to do that with Xavier, at least, when with that one scene with his conversation with his friend. Like,
he's like, is that and his parents. Friend's two moms? Like, what are you?
I know. Are we okay, dude? And like, I have two moms. Of course I'm okay with
that. But that's what I mean. They had all the building blocks there. It would have been really, really easy to make.
And it's good that the thing with his parents as well. And there's more than enough like internal conflict and like identity crisis stuff that they could have explored. And well, they didn't, because it's a Filipino movie and they had to just go the formula of melodrama and predictable, like, ex-girlfriend. Oh, that's what's happened to
the girl next door.
So, like, but anyway, whenever I got a bit annoyed with it, I was like, the resort is really pretty, though. Like, looking at the beach.
Good to see them again, and hearing the theme song was really nice, because I was like, oh.
Yeah. And we're seeing even, like, their teacher, who was really fun, and, I mean, just even the idea of the theme of their whole thing, which is like not even subtle, like the quest for truth. Yeah, okay. And when JC Alcantara cries, I cry.
he killed the scene.
When he cries, so I cry. I don't even care. But that scene, he was really drunk, and he was like, "Xavier, what happened to us?" And I was like, "Yes, what did happen to you?" And I was also crying and whatever. Yeah, and their big confrontation scene is really good because, like, Tony La Bruska is also he's pretty great, but, like, when that kid cries, you're done. He breaks your heart. But then I also, I cried at multiple points because I also really like the series, so it's just nice to, like, it's like coming home or whatever. And then, Xavier's final speech at the end, like, his summary, that's what you said. That could have been the journey for him, right? Finding out more about himself, about what real love is, and learning, blah, 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 finding his truth. Because he had this really good speech about, well, it was supposed to be the synthesis of what you learned in the literary camp, but he said, yeah, I learned about myself and to really figure out what I want and to be brave, to be courageous and things like that. And it's like, that's a message we all need. And Tony La Bruska was good at telling it, so. Cry, but then of course at least they finally wrapped it up really neatly. Well, there's no other way. Like, you can't not end happily with this, not after what you put us through.
It's just like, them now. It's like, if you make more, you break them up immediately again. Like,
it's like, no, I at this point, like, I'm fine with this being the last thing. If you know,
please don't make any.
Or it's like a spin-off with Kukai and Seth. Or a spin-off with Junjun living his life or something.
Yes, make this about Junjun. He deserves the focus now.
I mean, for a moment when he had that moment with Crystal, I was like, are they going to pair the spears? Let's not do that to them, because that's also, they deserve better than just, you know, pairing them up randomly.
This is Junjun finding the story of what his vocation is. That's what it was. He was like, I really like to help
he's life coach to everyone. I will say that, like, as a kind of Filipino literature nerd, a lot of other than, of course, Simon was a fictional character and his books were fictional, but the other stuff that they mentioned there, like, oh my god, those are the things that I read in high school and college, and those are real books and real things. And Junjun's costume at the end is from a book that I really loved, and I'm like, oh, I can't believe, like, they referenced that, and it's really funny.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I was like, these are, well, and then even the costumes, like, yeah, if you paid attention to your Filipino literature in college for us, like, you would recognize things, and it that was fun for me. Like, oh, those characters.
That is really cool.
I like, they did the research at least, like, you can tell, so that's nice. And I still enjoyed it. I was still an emotional wreck at the end of it, even if in my mind, like, oh, none of this conflict was necessary, but they did it for us, and it was a good, like, good way to revisit the characters in the series, I think, for me. And it's still fresh, so I haven't really maybe fully processed it. I don't know how, I think you watched it a bit earlier than me, so you've had maybe a couple of hours more time to analyze it. But it was fun. That's Hello Stranger, the movie.
You were cute. Yeah, no, and I mentioned what you said, it reminded me of Girl Next Door, because Girl Next Door did this. Mm-hmm. It did this, it just devolved into the stereotypical. Well, see, I would even have been fine with it devolving into stereotypical, like, love triangle, like, nonsense. And when a lot of people started criticizing the show, I feel like even the creators behind the show thought it was because people were mad about not getting their ship. But really, it's because this drama seems to excuse biphobia. Like, I really didn't think that the creator, something from the people of Game Boys would do that. But it was a different writer than Game Boys' writer. And I'm especially hard on Girl Next Door, not only because Game Boys was so good and authentic, but because with Pearl Next Door, they went really hard in their advertising beforehand, talking about how, like, we shot the pilot 3 different times because we tossed it out. We wanted to make sure we were doing this right. Like, we wanted to make sure we were reflecting these voices correctly. And then you have, like, the girl that Pearl is in love with, basically be like, I don't want to be with you because I don't date straight or bi girls. And then, rather than the show, like, thought at the beginning being about, like, Carlene seeing, that's not okay. Like, that's really bigoted of me. It basically was like, well, my exes went on to date men, so I'm traumatized, and that justifies my feelings about this.
And, like, I have, like, to catch up with Girl Next Door, really.
Don't! I'm sorry now. I'm just really angry because, like, in some Q&As that, like, the show creators did on Twitter, it makes it sound like they think that that was a justifiable explanation for her. Like, oh, she's got trauma. Like, if something happened to you, you would have trauma. And I was like, no, like, this is for bigotry, but the bigotry, like, especially because of this, like, BS, like, of the three sad examples that she gave, one was totally irrelevant because they introduced that ex-girlfriend of hers, and they're really close still, and the ex-girlfriend called, she does sort of call her out, where she's like, I told you from the beginning that I was bi, you knew that, and, like, that's not why we didn't break up, so I would go date a man, we broke up, we were done, and then I met a man.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
And the other two, it did sound like they were messier, but, like, Carlene being like, it's like, she's like, I'm not even going to start because inevitably they will leave me or whatever. I was like, well, no, that's why.
Oh,
like,
no.
I was like, you can pick up with somebody for any reason. Like, the justification that you're giving is, it like, it just doesn't, and it never, especially with Pearl, the kind of character Pearl was on Game Boys, that she would she never called Carlene out about it. Ever. Like, Carlene's apology to Pearl was like, I'm sorry that I said this to you. It's because I have this trauma. Here's why. And Pearl was like, okay, I understand. And I was like, no.
Pearl would never be that way. Pearl would fight back. Pearl doesn't take any shit.
There's even a scene at the very, like, one of the last couple episodes where, like, Pearl kind of mentions it again. Like, she gives Carlene, like, an in to apologize more or again. And, like, better, because she didn't really apologize. She just said, I'm sorry, like, I was traumatized, and that's why I treated you this way. I hope
that's
you understand
not a real
me
sorry.
Now. No, exactly. And then Pearl, like, sort of brings it up, like, and, you know, and then Carlene, like, laughs awkwardly and looks down, doesn't apologize. Again, is given in it. And then Pearl's, like, laughs it off, and he's like, you already apologized for that. I was like, no, you didn't. And so she did end it with Pearl choosing neither of them, but the way that she did it was like, I'm definitely not, I don't want to date you, Alex, I'm not in love with you. And then Carlene being like, I'm in love with you, Carlene, but you're not ready yet. So it ends with her, she's like, I love you, but you're not ready. And so it ends with Carlene in therapy. And I was like, this show became about Carlene. Like, Pearl disappeared. And even his rejection of Carlene, I was so mad about. And the fact that it was because the people behind the show ultimately seemed to think that, like, this is, like, somebody might be traumatic, but even then it was centered in such a way that wasn't, Carlene needs to go to therapy because she's hurting by people in her life, but Carlene needs to go to therapy because she has, like, something that's holding her back from really experiencing her life, and she needs to get over that. Because that was the whole thing, is that she got really insanely jealous of Pearl, or of Alex and Pearl's relationship. And so then her friend says to her, like, you know, you're hurting yourself because, like, you're letting your fear hold you back or whatever. And so it was implying that that's what she was in therapy for. And I was just like, no. So, like, I don't, but it apparently was a different writer than who wrote Game Boys. But I was like, I don't trust anything you have to do with Pearl again now if it's that same person again. And I'm mad
that's
that you
so
seem
sad.
To think. And I'm mad that they seem to think the reason people are upset about the ending is because their ship just didn't get it. And I was like, no. Like, it's that you didn't get it. And you made such a big deal at the beginning saying that you did and it was really important to you. And you, like, I don't know what you, did you talk to any bi people? Like, you seem to realize that it exists. But then, like, did you actually talk to them?
You know, what's really sad is up until now, there are still people that I meet in life who are like, oh, my friend said he's bisexual, and I'm like, no, he's just confused. And I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Are you a real?
It is very common, and that's why I was excited for Next Door, because I really thought that they would tackle it really well.
They did it badly. Oh, no.
And again, I think I would be less hard on them if they hadn't gone so hard at the beginning, like, we're taking our time, we're doing this right. And then again, you make your lead character disappear, and it was Carlene Next Door. That's what it was. It was sad. And then she's going to be back in Game Boys 2, being, like, their emotional support again. And, like,
maybe Gavin, she should just, you know, just put Pearl and a crossover. Just give
Pearl. Yes, oh my god, Pearl and like, I mean, Pearl had another, they introduced her friend Fonzie in it, so she did have somebody who was always in her corner, and I get that probably, like, Kokori and Elijah were probably too busy with other commitments to be able to really be in Pearl next door, and that's fine, but it did, especially to bring her back as their emotional support again in Game Boys 2, when it was I felt like she's owed more support from them, and you didn't have to get them very much. You could imply a lot of conversations are going on without showing them, but you only did that, like, twice. And it was like,
but what, whatever happened to what's his face? Like the two other guys from Game Boys, you know, like what's his
Terrence,
face? Terrence and the other guy, the friend of what's his face again?
Anyway, they're those the two guys. They're going to be like a secondary ship in Game Boys 2, I think, because they have 13 and a half.
They have. Yeah, I saw that one where they kind of met on Twitter or whatever.
Yeah, they were setting it up.
The connection. And, no, okay, but like Terrence is like trash. And
Terrence looks so compared to Carlene now.
Really?
Yes.
Hello, Stranger. I'm
going
to go back to Hello, Stranger.
And Hello, Stranger's fast. I'm much angrier Girl Next Door than, than Hello, Stranger, the movie, so.
Yeah. That's disappointing, because I really did not have time to catch up on it, and I was looking forward to
that. That is like, disappointing, because there's so few, you know, GL series GLs. As it is.
So and maybe that's why they were boasting about it, and how much so-called research or whatever, because they knew they were trying to cash in on this whole, we are the first, blah, 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 but right. Oh my god. But
well, I trust them, and I would still trust the Game Boys writer, but I don't trust they found to write Pearl Next Door, because it was somebody different.
Okay. Right, and that's the thing too, like, even, especially because it's the first, so, like, even if people, the real reason that people are mad isn't because the ship didn't end up together, but for it to be, like, the first, really, and then to still, to have a ship that is built to not end up together, is, like, what was the point of that? Why didn't you just not do it?
Yep. I don't.
It's like some sort of big, like, empower, oh, she didn't have to choose, like, yeah, but it's a GL, like, they're supposed to end up together.
I think they did
end up with someone.
It almost felt like that was a pivot because they realized how divided everybody was getting. So it almost felt like they were like she should choose herself, and you can't. How can you argue against the choose herself ending? I was like, I'm arguing, but she didn't though. Really, she chose Carlene, but she's like, I'm not going to date you yet. Like, you're not ready.
Yeah.
So that's actually not even her choosing herself. It was, and she did kind of say, like, I'm not going to wait for you. But, like, in the final episode, she rejects Alex, and then tells Carlene, I love you. Like, why do you love her? And why the ex of Carlene's that they introduced, she's amazing too. I was like, why are these two incredible, interesting women, like, why are they sucking up to this, like, horrible person? Like, she's beautiful. Like, she casts a spell on about them. You know, like, what is happening? Like, she's treating you like, too, like, you're literally, like, you're planning your friend's wedding and giving her shit and being biphobic to her face. Oh, like, yeah, Clay's planning her wedding, but will say stuff like, you dated a man after you dated me.
Oh, wow.
And that's why I'm traumatized about Pearl.
Oh, my God.
Really? No, no. And then Joel was just like, I love you. And I was like, why?
No. Why? That's not even loving yourself anymore.
No.
Oh, man.
No.
That's disappointing. That's
disappointing. It was a dumpster fire. And I think I'm angry about it because it was such a left field. Like,
right.
His Game Boys was so good and Pearl was amazing and it made me not.
Yes.
Care about her and almost be annoyed by her for not standing up for herself. Like,
why do they keep doing this to the female characters?
Why does it always, like, literally, I think her friend kind of got a boyfriend at the end of that episode. I was like, you were the first GL and you ended up with two dudes together and that was it. Like, we have countless ones of those now. Like, we have lots of them now. We don't
need.
Yeah.
Yes. Basically. Yep.
Let's go to Korea now, which is churning out a lot of BLs, and so I am waiting for my one GL that comes out next month. But
finally coming out next month?
It's funny, because I was like, on the one hand, I see you, Korea. I see that you're, like, constantly churning these out now. Mm-hmm. Where are my women? But on the other hand, like, look how far we came in a year. Like, when did Where Are Your Eyes Linger start airing? Like,
right, like last year, yeah.
It's like, or like 1 year April ago. Last year or something.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, it's actually kind of amazing.
Oh my god, has it really been a year?
It's I know, right?
A year already.
Doesn't feel like it.
We would be here with Korea, and we got, like, tons this year, like out of nowhere.
I mean, there are so many like lower substandard like Filipino BLs that I've seen on YouTube. I'm like, I can't even keep track of these anymore. Just after Game Boy said hello Stranger, I'm like, there's so many, and I tried watching some of them, and I'm like, pass.
The like in the movies, Gaya Pelicula is apparently really good, but it doesn't have.
I haven't checked.
It doesn't have the fluffiest ending, so I have not. I have avoided it because I have like a very high fluff bar in my life. So,
so you've seen this part? I haven't seen. I've seen the trailer. It's, I think, oh, Gaya Pelicula, that looks promising, but
apparently, it's an end well. All the others, that's the other really good one. If you don't mind, not that fluffiest not ending.
Well,
so I can check it out.
In terms of Korean dramas, I did watch ABL, a Korean BL. Speaking of, I guess we won't talk about it very much, but just insert for Japan, everyone watch Cherry Magic. It's so good. It's so adorable.
Yes, Cherry Magic! Yes,
it was a while, it was like a little bit ago, but very, very sweet. And yeah, my only complaint would be just like, we didn't really get a kiss. And we got a kiss from the stupid secondary couple that I do not care about.
I did not care about them either, at all.
Yeah, but we didn't get a kiss from the main couple. Okay. But it's still okay because it's a great character study and also the slow burn is delicious. All right.
Did you watch the special?
I did watch the special. And again, I was like, you bastards. But it was really cute to see it from like the perspective of the friend, the guy that was like sort of like seemed like he was like coming between them, but then he was like helping them. I love that
kid.
He's
their little duckling, I've decided. He's like their little duckling and is imprinted upon.
He was super cute. Okay. So now Korea. There was a BL that I watched, To My Star. It's, again, the same production company that did Where Your Eyes Linger, Mr. Heart, etc. And we have to knock down their doors to get a girl, like a GL from them specifically. But it's also, it's not like totally specified. Didn't call back to it. But the actor that played Pilhyun is in it, and he plays Pilhyun. He's still, his name is still Pilhyun. Okay. But it's like maybe many moons later because he's the owner of a, like, he's the CEO of an entertainment company, which, sure. And I was mad they didn't even mention Hemi, and they even gave him, like, a little tiny hint of a romance with the female reporter that was also there, which I do enjoy that there's, like, a, they always have, in their shows, they always have, like, a woman who has an important role who is, like, an ally and is not there to get between anyone, so I do like that. So anyway, so they had, like, a little hint of a romance, and I was like, how dare you? Hemi is at home right now, profiting off of his extra-hand company. So, anyway.
Maybe she's divorced him and taken him for lots of money and is living her best life.
There we go. So he's just like, he is owner of an extra-hand company, and his actor, there's an actor whose name is Kang Soo-jun. So, for the first episode, they were calling his name lots of times, and I thought they were saying So Kang Joon, and I was like, excuse me? we named our male lead So Kang Joon? But no, it's Kang Soo Joon. And he is like, he has to hide out because he got into a scandal. It looks like he got into a bar fight, or people are saying he like punched out his actor friend, and this is like a huge, horrible scandal, okay? It's gonna maybe threaten his career, looming large. And so CEO, Pilhyun, has him hide out in his like special secret apartment house where also this guy who is a chef, he's not really a chef though, he is a chef in that he could cook gourmet meals for you and they're very sexy, but he just like works at a restaurant, right, that is owned by his friend. He's like working class dude who's been like working since he was a teenager, and he doesn't have very many social skills, whatever, but he is for some reason staying at Pilhyun's house because Pilhyun owes his parents a favor, and I was like, okay, sure. And so Kang Joon and Ju is his name, this taciturn chef man, are in a forced cohabitation, and Ju really doesn't like Kang Soo Joon, sorry. He really doesn't like not So Kang Joon because I guess he believes the little, you know, violent drunken man thing, and also he just doesn't like people. Like, he's just like, there was no explanation that I understood for why he was so taciturn, other than just like, he is poor and he has pride and also not many social skills. So, you know, now he's just like this. But he was super adorable. He was super adorable, even though he was just a jerk face for most of it. I was like, leave Soju alone. And Sojin is just such a nice dude. He's just, like, friendly to everyone, and he, like, immediately likes other dude. He immediately likes you. But then Jiwoo is like, you're always flirting with everyone. You tell everyone they're handsome, and you, like, tell everyone you like them. So, like, why would I believe that you like me? And then Kang Sojin is just like, I'm just an extrovert. I'm sorry that I'm just nice to people. I don't know what to do. I can't stop it. So, anyway, it was a really, really cute, like, the main story is literally just them falling in love, you know, and eventually Jiwoo getting the stick out of his ass, so that he can, you know, be happy in a romance. But there's also the side plot of what really happened, right, at the bar fight. And obviously, this dude has never punched anyone in his life, so it was not him. But you do untangle that, and it was, like, interesting. And Reporter Girl has something to do with that, right? She helps him get the truth out there. So go her. So yeah, that's it. It was just like, I think it was, I still think that Where Your Eyes Linger is like the best one, just because it was like so well written, and there was like so many layers to every interaction. It was just crazy good. But this one is much more lighthearted, and you're gonna get more, like, you know, they don't just give you like one stiff kiss. And they kissed early on in Mr. Heart, but you know, so there's more than kissing in this one. Let's just say that. There's more than kissing. and I was like, oh, okay. All right. They're going for it. but it's still not my favorite, because I hear it's, you know, Where Your Eyes Linger. But still.
This is like the progress that we have had just for BLs in Korea in the past year is rapid, because how many years did it take us to get that with K-dramas to go from like the stiff kiss?
Yeah, that's true. It's true. They just condensed that decade of history into 1 year. So yeah, I definitely recommend it. The episodes were also longer than the Where Your Eyes Linger and Mr. Heart episodes. I think each episode was like 12 to 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. 9 episodes, and then just like a making special. So it says special, but it's literally just behind the scenes. So cute though. So yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I watched it all, you know, in like one sitting, and I had a good time, and I think that y'all will too. The acting's also really good, especially, I just really like the Kang Sojin guy. He's just so effervescent. Other dude, I don't know. I can't say anything because I really don't feel like he had very much of a character other than Grumpy. but he was very cute. He was very cute despite his grumpiness. And also, I love how Pilhyun was just like, again? Because there's a part where he sees them kiss and he's like, motherfucker, everyone's always kissing. Like, all the dudes I know kiss each other. But he doesn't. He didn't say that, but he was just like, again? And I was like, okay. So yeah, that is that on that. I have nothing else to say about that. But I definitely recommend it. I think you guys would like it a lot. Obviously, I may as well talk about this one because I've been talking about it for a year previous to watching it. But True Beauty ended last week, I guess. Yay, True Beauty finally happened, and then it stopped happening, and then it ended. But no, it was. I really my expectations were bottom of the barrel before it happened, because the webtoon is garbage. I'm sure I've already complained to you guys about the webtoon, but literally the webtoon is about a girl who wears makeup so that she looks like a goddess, but without the makeup she's unattractive because she has pimples and bad like glasses and just whatever, you know, just like the basic Not Another Teen Movie hair, glasses, ponytail, and paint on her overalls when she's not wearing makeup. And then the webtoon gets super lost in, they introduce a love triangle, and then it just all becomes a love triangle. Like, nothing else happens. She never, like, her friends don't find out about her bare face in the webtoon until after the drama. Like, literally, the author of the webtoon just stole the chapter or the episode of the drama where her friends find out about her bare face and then put it in her webtoon, because it had not happened yet. Even though,
I'm glad that the drama finally forced her to make that happen. Yes. Like, let's...
Even though it's been 140 chapters, she has made no progress. So anyway, never read the webtoon. It is garbage. However, the drama, in which is hilariously makes webtoon fans angry and think the drama is bad, really condensed her arc. Like, they really just made, they were like, okay, this is what we have to do. She is uncomfortable at her bare face, right? She thinks she's ugly. We have to make it so that she's bullied. She's like super bullied at her old school because people are assholes, right? And that's what makes her want to change schools and hide her face. So she does that.
But then a boy, here's a boy, plucked right out of Maya D's Gangnam Beauty, already knows her bare face, and he's already into her. Crazy, crazy town. And so, like, the main actual arc of the story is literally the same as Maya D's Gangnam Beauty, which is I must love myself no matter what I look like. Here is a boy who will help me do that by loving me no matter what I look like and not condemning me for wearing makeup, but also telling me I look beautiful without it. Therefore, I like both sides of me. It doesn't matter if I'm wearing makeup or not. And now I feel confident to tell people that this is my face without makeup. That's the story. But because the actual selling point and the reason why it's like the number one webtoon in the world is the love triangle, they still have to put the love triangle in. Mm-hmm. And so, second male lead, here comes another Sojin. And he is, and also, they also succeeded in making the turning point of the love triangle, I guess, or actually rather the turning point of the friendship, because the two boys were best friends. And in the webtoon, it's literally like, oh, hey, we were best friends, and then our mutual best friend died from suicide, and one of them blamed the other, and that's why we're not friends anymore. And then 60 chapters later, we're friends now. However, one of us must go so that she can date the other. So you will never see this friendship. And when I come back, we will hate each other because we both love her. So no friendship, none for you. And in the drama, it was like they literally made like Suho is Chalunu's character, right? So his whole arc is that he is traumatized because his best friend died, right? And he blames himself because he did not pick up the phone call. He didn't answer the call when his friend called him, and then his friend died. And he's like, this is my fault. Also, Sojun, his ex-bestie, also blames him. So he has, like, panic attacks. He has, like, nightmares. He can't, like, function. He doesn't talk to anyone at school, etc. Until he meets main girl, Jugyeon. And then they start interacting. He starts opening up more. He starts actually making friends. He finally tells Sojun the truth about what happens. Because Sojun, for some reason, just thought that Suho talked to their friend and was like, yeah, I guess you should die. I don't know what the fuck Sojun thought, but he literally thought that Suho just, like, let him die. So whatever. So they repair their friendship, but there is an issue because Sojun also likes Jugyeon now, right? So he has to, like, back off because Suho and Jugyeon are in love. And then it's actually a compelling drama, basically, is what I'm saying. Like, it's actually compelling. You root for both guys. I hear myself.
You guys hear me?
No.
A bit of an echo, yeah. And I heard myself as well.
Okay. Let's see if that's better. I think so. Okay. So it's compelling. And then they actually culminate in, you know, I think the one issue is Park Yuna, who was also in My Idea's Gangnam Beauty, because everything is the same as My Idea's Gangnam Beauty. And she was the most beautiful girl. She was, I don't know if you remember her, but she was just like the nice girl, Angela, who helped Jugyeon, helped everyone, even helped the bad girl, Suha, right? So she was just there, like, being everyone's
counselor. In True Beauty. That's my love triangle.
Yes, in True Beauty. Right. That's her. So she is Jugyeon's new best friend at the school. Mm-hmm. She's so kick-ass, right? I loved her story for half of the show. So, you know, and her parents are abusive, or her dad's abusive, rather. And you knew that, like, because they give you the relationship chart from the start, so you knew that she was in love with Suho also. And it was only, in the first half, it was only like, oh, she always notices what he's doing, right? Or she always comments on what he's doing, or, like, something that happened when they were kids, because they were friends when they were kids. But then, in, like, episode 8, halfway through, she realizes that she loves Suho, at the same time that she realizes that Suho loves Jugyeon. So then she's like, I can't live like this. And then her arc gets not good because then it becomes like, I must fight to the death for Suho. But so that part I didn't like. I was not a fan of that. However, they use that as the vehicle for what makes Jugyeon like accept herself, right? Because Sujin, that's right. Park Yuna. Park Yuna's character is Sujin. Sujin was the first person other than Suho to find out about Jugyeon and was like, oh, it's fine, you know, you're still wonderful, I don't care what your face looks like. But then because of Suho, she's like, reverse Uno card. And that's what makes Jugyeon realize kind of like, it's really not my face, right? My face the issue. People have other things happening that make them be assholes. And then also, then she's like, oh, look at me. You know, I love myself and y'all will just love me too. Okay. So that's no good because it sucks for Sujin and also for Park Yuna because she was doing such a great job with her character. But they still fix it. They have a wrap-up arc for her at the end. So it's still like, you know, she gets a little bit of a redemption. She apologizes. She grows as a person, even though you don't get to see very much of it because they don't focus that much on her. So I was happy that they resolved it, even though I wish they hadn't done it at all. And Sojun just, I mean, people obviously were very, very divided in the triangle because it's like the whole point. The whole point is for it to be 50-50. But the drama clearly did not care about Sojun's love. And I understand why, because it doesn't add anything to the story. You could literally remove his feelings for Joo-young and nothing changes. Even in the webtoon, where they literally date for 50 chapters, you could remove those 50 chapters of them dating and it changes nothing. So, instead of that, thank God they didn't do that. They were like, he loves Joo-young now. And he's so sad she loves Su-ho. And then the next time you see him, he's still sad, guys. He's sad about it. And then, like, there was one scene where he had a full montage of their moments. And their moments were him watching her sleep and her roaring at him. Because they don't do anything else! And then it's like, he's gonna throw away the cast where she wrote, you know, she wrote something on his cast because he got injured. He doesn't throw it away. He doesn't throw it away. And there's still 6 more episodes of the show. And so he's like, well, since I'm not throwing it away, I will spend the next 6 episodes still feeling the exact same way. Sad that the girl I like does not like me. It's like, there's so many other things he could be doing. And they finally, in the final episode, he does get his, you know, he moves on and he gets his storyline that was promised from the start, which is that he and the dead best friend were idol trainees. They were going to be, they were going to debut as idols together. And so then at the end, he finally does debut. So it's like, okay, that could have been the story this whole time. And they even had the vehicle for it because Joo-young's sister works at the entertainment company and Suho's dad is the owner of the entertainment company. And also the quote unquote real reason that Seon, who is the dead friend, died. So that's also why Su-ho is estranged from his father, etc. So they could have shown so many scenes of Sojun in the idol trainee place, right? And move forward Suho's plot by Sojun being the one to discover it. Instead, it's Hee-young, who is Jigyoung's sister, who discovers stuff and moves Suho's plot forward, which is great for me because I love Hee-young. She's amazing. And her romance, she has a romance with Jigyoung's teacher, which is literally like reverse role reversal. So like, you know, he's the girl in the relationship and she's the guy. She's always pursuing him. He's always like coming up with the reasons why they can't be together. He's also poor and in debt. And her money is what will save him. And she does, like, backs him up against the wall constantly, you know? She gets jealous whenever he speaks to another woman, etc. So it's basically all of the tropes of K-dramas, but she's the one doing them as the male lead. And it was hilarious and amazing. So I don't mind her stealing Sojun's storyline, but I'm also like, why is Sojun here? You don't have a storyline! So anyway, that's all. But yeah, overall, it was really cute and fun. And the only thing that they did wrong, aside from Sujin, Park Yuna's character, they did her dirty in the back half. They could have had it be another character. And the second thing they did wrong was include the time jump. Because the time jump and the Su-ho must leave for reasons is, of course, like, super important to all K-dramas, always. You must have a random-ass time jump and leaving for unexplained reasons. Or actually, his reason was explained. But the unexplained part is like, it's been 2 years and I couldn't continue the relationship with you online because that would be impossible. So
I would miss you too much and I would get on a plane and I would go right back.
Exactly. So they did that. I was like, I hate it here.
So I couldn't talk to you at all. You should forgive me.
Exactly. So they did that. I feel like it was upgraded in that they did show them trying and then he was like too stressed about the thing that was happening, the spoiler thing that was happening. So he broke up with her. So like he did officially break up with her. But it was still like, this is dumb, and why did you do this?
That's and then what makes Coffee Prince still iconic.
That they didn't do it?
Later, is that they stayed together.
Exactly.
They visited each other. Like, they saw each other at points.
I can't believe that you guys made that happen. That's crazy. And it's funny, because they even had an excuse. They could have been like, we literally can't visit each other because of the pandemic. But no. Instead, they were like, she was like, what money does an 18-year-old have? And I was like, he owns a whole entertainment company. He does, like, what you want to. But okay. So anyway. Anyway, they did that. And so if they had cut that out, then it would just be like 10-10, 10-10 drama. But instead, they didn't do that because they wanted to have, in the webtoon, he leaves and that's why she dates Sojun, right? So there's 50 chapters of him gone and her getting Sojun. So they tried to, they hint that that's going to happen, but literally it was like the end of episode 14 and they're like, is this going to happen? And it's like, it's not going to happen. And then they came back and like, you're right, it did not happen. So I was like, okay, thanks for that, I guess. That was very, very full of point. Okay, so that's it. That's True Beauty. It was super cute. Obviously, very tropey. It's the by the same director as Extraordinary You, so it has like all the stuff. It's like, it is the webtoon that Extraordinary You was making fun of.
Oh, you know, nice.
So yes. It's like, if you were watching a webtoon, if you're watching a drama about Namju and Juna, that's what it is. So yeah. And I think the director clearly had fun with that. Because he's literally like, all the stuff he did in Extraordinary You, but this time, unironically. So yes. Aside from that, what else? Another one that finished, and that is very, very different, but also very, very good, is Run On, which is Shin Se-kyung's drama.
I'll ask you about that.
Run On was so, so, so good. It's very, like, chill and kind of, it's not really slow paced. Like, everyone talks really fast, full of witty dialogue. There's always, like, 10 conversations going on at once. But in terms of, like, nothing, like, very dramatic happens in it. It's very much slice of life. But all the characters were super well drawn out, and they have, like, all different kinds of relationships to each other. So it's kind of, it feels like it's a friend group, even though most of them don't know each other at the start of episode 1. But by episode 16, it feels like they've just been, like, all best friends for years. So it is Im Shewan, that's his name.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the ZEA idols that I never have ever heard a single one of their songs, but they all act now. he's Park Young Shik's friend. So he is a runner. He's an athlete. He runs, but then he has to quit being a middle distance runner, whatever it's called, a race person, for reasons. Okay. And in the meantime, he met Shin Se-kyung. She's a translator, so she was like translating his interviews, or an interpreter, really. She was like interpreting his interviews for international audiences or reporters. And they just like at first, it's like they're just like kind of become friends, but they obviously like each other. So then they eventually just become, they're dating. And they have like the issue of like, you know, oh, he's rich and his dad doesn't like her. And there's many complicated reasons why his dad doesn't like her. And so that's a problem, but it's not really a problem. It's only a problem because she's like, I love myself and I'm not going to be with someone whose family doesn't like me. But then she's like, never mind. I don't love myself. No, she's like, never mind. I also love myself. And therefore, I will do what I want and not what his family wants, because that's dumb. So that's like really their only issue, aside from the fact that he's very weird. He's like, I don't know. Like, they don't ever say that he has, like, he's not like neuroatypical. Is that neuroatypical?
Mm-hmm.
He's not. Yeah. Like, they don't say it. So I don't actually know if they're trying to go for that, but he definitely like, doesn't react to cues. Like, he doesn't really understand, social cues. And so that is frustrating to her at times, but then she just like eventually just goes with it, right? Like, he never changes. He doesn't ever become more. She just like understands and, then is like cool with him. So yeah, they have a really cute dynamic. Then there's Kang Tae-o, who I love. I love him. He makes the craziest faces. He's like a art student. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure how old he's supposed to be. He's an art student. And there is a painting he made that CEO lady, who is also, she's the head of like a PR company. And she's also the PR agent for Runner Man. So he likes her and she likes his painting. So she's trying to get him to paint her something. And he's trying to get her to date him. But she's like, you're a child, even though you're probably 2 years younger than me, but you're a student and therefore you feel like you're a child and therefore I will not date you. However, please paint me this. So they have like a really fun back and forth throughout. And I was like at times more invested in their, you know, relationship than the main relationship, but it's not like either of them are boring or displeasing in any way. They're both super cute and fun and full of witticisms about life and love. And they even have a friend, the roommate of Shin Se-kyung's character, who is asexual, which is awesome. I was like, oh, hey, representation. So she's just like, I mean, like, she just like mentions it. And then later she's like, I'm not like against romance though. I'm just asexual. And I was like, oh, the adding the spectrum. Oh my God. So that was fun. Also, yeah, there's a lot of women in it that all get like very different stories, and interesting arcs. And then I'll just, you know, I think it must have been great for the ladies on set. Like, Im Siwan's sister also has her own relationship that she tries to keep from her family because she doesn't want her, not like they don't know about it, but she like, you literally never see her husband / fiance. I don't know if he's her husband or fiance, because she's always keeping him away from her family, because her family, like, the dad's like political. He's some kind of like congressman or something. So he's always trying to use his kids for political gain, right? Cause they're both in the limelight. And so she's like, you will never be using my husband. But that was fun. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's like the one bad thing about Run On is that it's literally a show about how important language is, right? And how translations bring you together, because Shinsuke Kyung is a translator, but it's Netflix. So the translations are horrible. And so you're like, this is ironic. Because you're unironically telling me how important translation is. And then you're just like, here's what I did, you know, at 5 a.m. last night to get this deadline in. So a lot of times, like, you'll see, like, Twitter threads of, like, the correct translation of moments, right? Or be like, oh, you missed this. In case you missed it, because Netflix sucks, here's what was going on. So I guess if you watch it, you know, just look up the run-on tag. Run-on translation. And see if you will find some context clues. But I mean, it was still really enjoyable, even if there's a moment where you're like, I don't think that's right. I think that's wrong. And I'm really glad, like, Shin Se-kyung is, like, picking just better dramas now. Because, like, she had a history of, like, people thought she was horrible because the dramas she was in were just stupid. So now, with Rookie Historian, and which is also about the importance of language. Oh, look at that. And Run On. I'm like, yes, girl, live your best life. So yeah, I was really happy with that one. Also, I did not watch the final episode, but I'm sure I know how it ends. Mr. Queen just finished. So it got super huge in Korea. It had like 15 or 16% ratings. It went really crazy. And it's Shin Hye-sun, who is amazing. She's incredible, amazing.
It's like a typical 16 episode rom-com with ratings like that. Like, holy crap.
Well, it is a historical, quote unquote. It's a historical fantasy.
Still, but it's still the trendy historical. Like, right. It's not one of those, like, the 100 episode historical.
Yeah, definitely. It's not a real historical. It's a trendy. It's a 20 episode trendy historical. And I literally can never remember this man's name, but y'all know who I'm talking about.
Sleepy-eyed. I know exactly. I know who it is because, yes.
Sleepy-eyed man from Crash Landing on You. They're the main ship. Although mostly, I mean, I'm really like, everyone always raves about his acting and I love him. So he is a good actor, but she's the one that really is like,
she's amazing.
Yeah. She's crazy good. Now I really enjoyed it. It's really funny. It's very, very like, if you just like want to laugh and you just want to like look at people being silly, but also her duality, it's great. However, I don't really get why people were like as into it as they were. Maybe because I'm just stuck on the fact that, I don't know if you guys know the basic plot, the trick and the premise. But basically, Choi Jin-hyuk is a chef in the present. And
I knew she was a dude. I didn't realize it was from the present. Okay.
Yeah, he's a dude from the present. Or he's a dude. Choi Jin-hyuk is a dude from the present. He's a cook. And of course, he's a misogynist and a player and like whatever. Okay?
Yeah.
And then somehow he's on the run for reasons, like people are trying to kill him, and so, you know, he is drowning in a pool just as Shin Hye-sun's character So-young is drowning in a pool back in, you know, Joseon times. So it's like starts off Scarlet Heart style, right? He switches he switches with Shin Hye-sun's character So-young, and so now he is a present day man trapped in the body of a woman in the past. Okay, this premise has no implications for the plot whatsoever. It's like irrelevant. The only reason it exists is so that he could have gay panic. Because now he's in the king. Or the king is making moves on him. That's literally the only reason it exists. Because his knowledge of the future is just there to be like, oh my god, I think something bad happens to this king.
but he doesn't know enough to act on it or to do anything to stop that, you know? So it's literally just like, it's literally Scarlet Heart, except not that. It's like a Hattie Scarlet Heart. Because he knows the future, but not in any way that will be useful. And also, he is a man, but it's not like he's really, like, he doesn't change anything for women in that time, right? He changes things for his woman, in terms of, you know, just like standing up for herself more, or, you know, being so free and loose that makes the king actually love her instead of just having to marry her because he has to, right? So in that sense, he changes things for his woman, but he doesn't do anything. There's no like socio-political narrative behind it. There's no reason for him to be a man or for him to be from the future. It literally could have just been like, the queen is forced to marry the king, right? But she loves him and he doesn't love her. And then she has to win him over, you know, or she accidentally wins him over by saying, fuck it, to the palace. And then suddenly he loves her. That's like, could have been the exact same thing. There's no other reason. There's also, I guess, like the jokes about like, he's like cooking, you know, and he makes a McDonald's patty. He even calls it McDonald's,
okay.
But like he gives it reason. He even calls it, gives it like some fake, like, you know, Joseph reason for why it would be called that. And they're like, oh my God, that's so amazing. That stuff. Or like,
did they get McDonald's money from the show?
Right. And where he's dancing to Blackpink, you know, just in the rain, doing like, and they think it's like a rain ritual, but it's just a Blackpink song. So, you know, like stuff like that. Like, I guess without that, what would this show be? So that is why it exists. But anyway, the chemistry between Shin Hye-sun and Sleepy Eyed Man is so good. They are great together. They're awesome comedic duo. Everything else that happens is pretty, you know, generic, historical, or, you know, the historical that isn't really historical because it's not like a specific, you know, it didn't really happen, that kind of thing. So it's like Moonlight drawn by, like, Love and Moonlight. It's like Rookie Historian, but not because that had a social political message. So really, it's like Love in the Moonlight. That's literally what it is, except he is a dude from the present. So I guess the one thing I'm surprised about is that they really like went all in on the romance. Maybe it's because it's just Shin Hye-sun, so they don't really have anything. You know, they're not really making you think about the fact that it's a man. But so that's cool, I guess. And then the other thing too was, there's a part, like, at first, he's very much like, no, I like ladies. And so he envisions, you know, his Shin Hye-sun sort of, like, being flirtatious with, like, the handmaidens or, you know, like, getting close to the king's concubine that he's into. Or, sorry, court. What do you call them? Not concubine. Court, not court. It's a court lady, but, like, he's the royal
courtesan? No?
Consort. Maybe? No. Is it courtesan? I don't know. Whatever. The one that's, like, the official courtesan or the official concubine. I don't know, but they call it something else. I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, so he's into her at first. And I'm like, oh, that's an interesting love triangle, but no, it doesn't go anywhere. Then just like from one moment to the next, they have their first night together as king and queen, but like it was really uncomfortable for me. I guess I was the only one that thought was weird. I was the only one that cared. But he's imagining his handmaiden. And so then it starts where it looks like he's going to kiss the handmaiden. But then he wakes up and it's the king. And they slept together. And I was like, but he didn't know that it was happening. This is really weird. I feel really uncomfortable with this. But then they don't care. After that, they're in love. So I was like, okay, they're in love. I'm going with it.
I mean, this is also progress for Korea, I guess. Yeah. Like, that they never, like, Hail Mary out of there at the end. They're just like, I mean, it's Shin Hye-sun, but it's a man in a woman's body. And
I haven't watched the final episode, but I'm pretty sure they will, in the sense that they're going to have him sent back to the present, you know, and then Soyoung, the actual Soyoung, will just get to be in her own body again. Because there's like a part, it's sort of like she's maybe in there somewhere, but you never hear her voice, right? He gets back her memories, and that's when I think you can assume like they're both in there, but it's never like an oh my gosh situation where she comes out
they're and communicating her mind. With each other.
Which is why I was like, I feel like the show could have been so much better if it was like that. If you really felt like they were both in there, I would have been one of them at least. Ultimately, if they had shown Soyoung in the present in a man's body, if they had done back and forth, you know? So you could see how they're each reacting to their environment, that would have also been cool for me. But instead, they literally only show Soyoung in the man's body once,
so that she wakes up, right? And he's in a hospital in a coma. And so then she just goes back to sleep because he's in a coma. And that was the only time they showed her in the present. And I was like, okay. This could have gone somewhere, but I guess it's not relevant. I also don't know how they resolve the fact that people want him dead and the fact that, you know, like,
they don't want anymore. They're over it. It doesn't matter. They moved on, I guess.
Maybe we'll see in the next episode. We'll see. But yeah, there you go. It's really fun, but just turn your brain off. Turn it on for all the pop culture references and and jokes, but turn your brain off for everything else. Because
I wanted to ask if you have seen or heard anything about Kim Ji-won and Ji Chang-wook's new drama.
Oh yes, I have been watching it actually. Lovestruck in the City. Mm-hmm. It's cute. It's like, I mean, there's not really anything. It's not really anything to write home about. Like, it's definitely superior to his last two dramas, so thank God for that. he broke that novel streak, but it's like they have the mockumentary style where it's like, oh, it's a documentary of these six people or however many people it is about like love and how they find relationships in the city, but they really mm-hmm. kind of drop that quickly. And I don't mean like they always do it, like they always have them being interviewed. But you don't sense that there's any reason for the documentary other than so that these six people that already know each other can speak to the camera about their feelings. Like when it first came out, I thought that it was going to be, they're going to meet through the documentary and that would be really interesting. It's not. They already know each other. So I was like, who decided to make the documentary? So they already know each other. There's no point for the documentary other than for them to talk to the camera every once in a while, which I thought was weird. And it's also kind of unclear, like, sometimes they'll do the thing where one of them speaks and the other one responds, but they're both talking to the camera. So it's unclear if they're just intercutting between two different interviews that connect, or if they're literally responding to each other's answers. But it can't be the latter, because the whole crux of it is that Ji Chang-wook's character was abandoned by Kim Ji-won's character, like, 2 years ago or something, right? They were in a relationship, and then she suddenly didn't even dump him, she just left. And she stole his cameras. His very expensive cameras. she just made off with them. And so he's been trying to find this woman ever since. But of course he can't because she changed her name. So if they had been responding to each other, then I'm like, okay, obviously he would know it's her because she responds like it's her. So I don't know. I thought it was edited really stupidly. But the main love story of those two is interesting. Like, I was like, okay, why did she meet him, A. Why did she abandon him, B. Why won't she go back to him when she knows all his friends, C. You know? Because she obviously fell in love with him. Like, that part is interesting. And then the other friends have their own ships. Like, they're with each other. Their own ships with each other, because it's three couples. Which are cute, but they're not given nearly enough screen time. Like, it's literally just Ji Chang-wook and Kim Ji-won. Which is fine. But they give them some heavy problems, too. Or, like, some, like, they really need to work on this. But there's no time to work on this. So I was like, you could have just made them cute instead of maybe there'll be like a season two for the other couple or season three for the third couple. You know, maybe that's what they'll do. Because the way that it was done now, I was like, why are they even here? They're literally just here to comment on the main relationship and then, you know, in the background have horrible problems. But one thing that's great is Minho from Shiny. He's back in the military, right? So he's in it and he's just like the cop that Ji Chang-wook always complains. Like, whenever Ji Chang-wook gets drunk, he goes to the police station to look for the girl and tells them his story all over again. So Minho is just, like, the cop that's there, like, listening to his story and trying to help him find this girl. And then apparently, because it's Minho, his character is so popular that they're adding a 17th episode. So there's one more episode. Like, episode 16 aired, and it clearly wraps up the main story, at least. Mm-hmm. While leaving room for season two. But now there's one more episode, and it's going to be about Minho finding love. I can't wait!
I mean, I'm okay with that if they're going to add another episode.
Right.
Then, like, throw more drama for the main character.
Yeah.
Rather than throwing in more, like, unnecessary drama for the main character. Like, all right, this character we didn't do a lot with, so here we go. I think
it's a great idea. I love it. However, I guess that means there isn't a season two, because you could have just put it in season two. Or maybe it's just like a one season deal for him, you know, so they'll wrap him up, give him a nice girl, send him home, and then they could do season two later. I don't know, we'll see. But yeah, it's very, it's cute, but there's nothing, you know, nothing to write home about. It's just an interesting-ish character study, mostly of Kim Ji-won's character. Like, cause she's the only one where it's like, what are you
about? I think that though.
And yeah,
exactly. Sounds good.
Yeah. So I like that. Everything else is just eh. Speaking of eh, a Love So Beautiful Chinese remake. Same people that are doing Love Struck in the City. And in fact, one of the girls from Love Struck, not the main, obviously not Kim Ji-won, but another one of the friends is the main girl in Love Struck, in A Love So Beautiful. Which is funny because she's like a woman that's nearing 30 in Love Struck, and then she's a high schooler in Love So Beautiful. And it's like, the range. yeah, it's literally exactly the same as the Chinese version, except, I don't know, have you seen the Chinese version? Again, it's Hu Yutian's stone face, because that's literally the character is just, oh, I'm a stone face. I have no feelings. and I love it. But in the Chinese version, it's Kim Yohan, this like newly debuted idol boy, and they gave him feelings, but he's not really good at expressing them. So I was like, you should have just kept with no feelings.
You should have kept him to do that. Yeah.
A and B. Why is he? What is their issue if he does? If he expresses his feelings, like it doesn't make sense. Because like literally the whole thing about Love So Beautiful is that he's so closed off. He won't ever let her see how he feels about her. Right? That's why it takes them like 18 episodes to get together. And that's why they then break up for so long, because he can't express himself. He sucks. and so then there's like a big moment in like the penultimate episode where he finally unleashes everything. And then you're like, oh, that's what's going on. And I hated him for so long. I wanted him dead. And then he did that scene and I was like, I love you, precious angel puppy. It's okay. So like, it's like so important. It's so important. But in this, it's not there. So there's no reason. There's no reason why they can't be together. But oh well, they're still just not. And they cut each episode in half. So it's like 25 minute episodes of what would have been a nearly hour long episode, but all the same things happen in it. So they just take out character beats. They just take out emotional beats. And so you're like, why? So the main ship is horrible because of that. Like, I mean, it's not horrible. It's just, I don't root for them. I don't care about them because they took out all the important things that would make me care about his love for her. And the side ships are still cute. The side ship of their like two best friends, and they have like a whole like nice steady, like, you know, he likes her. She doesn't like him yet. Then she realizes she likes him. Then they date. Then they get married. Like, this is great. I love them. So they're doing just fine. But yeah. And the second male lead in the Chinese version, it's like, you've seen Playful Kiss or Mischievous Kiss or whatever. That thing, right? It's literally that setup, right? I have no emotions. I am a hater. You are dumb but adorable and you love me. And then this other guy who's not dumb. Well, he's a little bit dumb, but you know. And really awesome and well off and everything going for him, loves her. And there's literally no reason why she wouldn't be with him. But she isn't, because she loves the main guy. So it's that setup. Except in the Chinese version, he was so pushy and like really like forced his feelings on her. And I was like, shut up. I don't care about you. You suck now because you did that. Whereas so far, at least, the guy in the Korean version is just super sweet, just like a best friend to her. He's just very supportive. He knows she loves main guy. He doesn't ever try anything. That's it. You know, then there's a time jump. And then on the time jump, he's like, maybe I'll try something. But he's like, I'm going to go tell her. I like, oh, no, he's back. Okay. So it's very much like, aw, you poor baby, I'm sorry, she doesn't like you. And therefore that makes him even more rootable. And since main guy has no charisma, he's just like, first off, he looks like a baby because he is a baby. But they do the time jump and he's a doctor now. And there is a scene where his patient is dying and he's like crying. Also because he and main girl just broke up. So he's crying and his patient is dying. And I was laughing because it was just, he tried, he did his best, he did what he could with the scene, but it was just not happening for him, So, yeah, basically I'm saying I root for the second male lead in this one, even though there's nothing there because she doesn't like him at all. She doesn't care. Aside from the fact, she's a very good friend. So yeah, there you go. Don't watch Love So Beautiful is what I'm telling you. Don't watch Love So Beautiful. Do watch Love Struck in the City, as long as you're cool with it just being okay. Head not great. And then finally, I watched one episode of Love Featuring Marriage and Divorce, which is the latest in those Marriage is Horrible and Everyone's a Backstabber series that, you know, became popular with like Sky Castle, really, is what started it off, right? Sky Castle was like, look at me being the craziest MacDon you've ever seen, but on cable television. And then Penthouse was like, let me do that too. Oh, no, wait, sorry. World of Married Couple, or the World of the Married, was like, let me do that too, but make it all about marriage. And it hit like, you know, 25% ratings or whatever. It was crazy. Then Penthouse was like, let me literally just combine these two shows. I am now both these shows in one show. And it was so big. It now has a season two. It's coming out like next week. And now Love, Future Marriage, Divorce is again the same thing. So that's what that is. And there's no, if you want a MacDon, but on the budget, but on a better budget, then here you go. Love, Future Marriage, Divorce. But so far, I've only watched one episode. The first episode was good. I enjoyed it. Sung-hoon is one of the cheating husbands in it. So if you like Sung-hoon, however, his charm is just being like your generic boy next door who's, you know, adorable puppy, but not very much depth. He is now a cheating scum husband. So we'll see how that goes. Maybe he'll get to show more depth. But so far on MDL, it has a 7.5. So I guess it did not go that well because everyone else was like raving about Penthouse, raving about, you know, World of Married Couple, even though it's all the same beats of backstabbing and awfulness. Maybe there's not enough backstabbing. We'll find out. I don't know. We'll see. I'll be on the lookout and I'll let you guys know. And that is my Korean dramas. All right. Well, there you go. That is all of the Asian dramas that we are currently watching. Some of which you should watch too, and some of which you should not. Like Girl Next Door, or like Love So Beautiful. Do not watch those. The other ones you can watch. All right. So you can find us at withanaccent.com for news, reviews, very, very rarely interviews, and this podcast. And you can also find us at Pop A La Carte Pod, wherever podcasts are sold for free. Thank you all. Good night / morning. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.